Successful people make decisions very fast and change them very slow, if and when they change them at all. Yes, people who make decisions go to the top, and the ones who don't make them, they go nowhere. This is Bob Proctor, and this is another part of your puzzle, and it is a critical part of the puzzle on decision. If you look on page 29 of your guide, I point out here the subject of decision, properly understood, contains as much, if not more, potential for good than any other lesson that you could possibly study. Now, mastering the ability to make effective decisions quickly will create for you what many people would consider to be a charmed life. It'll also keep you in the leadership role that is envied by many and understood by few. Decision makers do go to the top, and those who don't make decisions, they seem to go nowhere. Now, you would think decision's a simple thing to learn. But you know something? Hardly anybody's ever learned how to do it. Do you realize what a hurdle this is for most people? Do you know that you can go all the way through our educational system and never, ever, ever come across the subject of decision? They never teach us how to earn money in school. You could have a degree in economics. You haven't learned a thing about earning money. Well, they never teach how to make decisions. And as a result, people grow up and they're wandering around, what do you think I should do? What do you think? What do you think? And generally, the person asked doesn't think. Now, look at the second paragraph on page 29. This is definitely a subject every parent should teach their children to master at the youngest possible age. And when we're teaching anything to a child, we should attempt to reduce it to the ridiculous in an effort to simplify the learning process. By the way, that's also good advice for the parent. I continually reduce stuff to the ridiculous for myself. Now, with this in mind, you could say that making decisions is merely answering a question. I'll give you something to think about. If you have got little children, why is probably one of the child's most favorite words. You might be wondering, why is it? Well, when a child's conscious faculties begin to develop, one of the first intellectual factors to move into action is the reasoning factor. And the reasoning factor thinks. Now, we discount them because they're small and we think, you know, they wouldn't understand. So if they come up and we tell them to do something, they'll say, why, Daddy? Why, Mommy? Or why? And we've got a stock answer. It's the one we were given. It's not natural to use it. And we say, just because. Now, the truth is, we should explain why. And that child will understand it. A little child is a mass of intelligence. The only thing they lack that you have going for you is experience and vocabulary. So we've got to use words that they'll understand, and we've got to make allowance for the fact that this may be the first time they've had this experience. When they ask why, answer them. And then they come and ask you, can I do this or can I do that? You might say, what do you think? You know, I feel very good about the fact that I never made decisions for my kids. I was fortunate enough to have been studying all this material before any of them were born. Now, they're all grown up now, but when they came and asked me to do something, I'd say, well, what do you think? And I'd say, oh, Dad, don't do that to me. And I'd say, no, wait a minute, I'm not doing anything to you. What do you think? And I always got them to make their own decisions. Nobody did that for me when I was a kid. Decisions make a big difference. I'll give you an example of what a decision will do. I mentioned on a previous recording that I had never gone to school. Now, I'm not necessarily proud of that. I'm not ashamed of it either. And there's times when I wish I had gone to school because I think you develop a social intelligence there that you probably never develop if you don't go. And besides, it teaches you where to find information. But you see, when I became 15 or 16, there was a question asked, and it was, are you going to go? Well, we had a choice. No. All I did with my kids was change the question. I asked them where they were going to go. Let them make the decision. We must learn how to do this. Now, you'll see around the middle of the page, you'll recall at the very beginning of the program, we quoted Earl Nightingale where he said something that I'll never forget. And if you're looking for this, I can show you where to find it in his material. He said, strange and marvelous things will happen with constant regularity. as we alter our lives and begin to live in harmony with the laws of the universe. Now, one of the laws of the universe is polarity, the law of opposites. Everything in the universe has an opposite. There's no up without down, no hot without cold. Question and answer are opposite sides of the same thing. Every question must have an answer. And you're about to learn how to tune into the answer. You'll hear about rhetorical questions, questions that don't have answers. They're statements. Every question has an answer. That's why wise people are always trying to think of good questions to ask themselves. Now, understanding this law and then altering our lives to live in harmony with it is certainly going to assist in the decision-making process. One of the major causes of indecision is a person's firm belief in limited supply. This is given to us in school. As little kids, if you study economics, you're taught limited supply. Of course, when we're growing up, you always hear it. You think money grows on, I didn't even have to say the word, you had it. Now think of this for a moment. We're always taught there's a limited supply. There's not enough to go around. Take your hands off that. There's an infinite source of supply. Go back and read Ralph Waldo Trine's book, In Tune with the Infinite. Go read Troward's quote again. My mind is a center of divine operation, and divine operation is infinite. Now, as you study the supply piece of the success puzzle and develop a proper understanding of the true source of supply, you'll realize there's never any limits. And in fact, there isn't even any limit to your potential. Now look over on page 30. Here I'm pointing out that you can virtually eliminate conflict and confusion in your life by becoming proficient at making decisions. Now stop and think of the conflicts and the confusion that you have. Many people live in a constant state of confusion. Make decisions. There's people that are totally miserable. They don't have to be that way. They've got to make a decision. Decision-making brings order to your mind. And of course, this order is then reflected in your objective world, in your results. No one can see you making decisions, but they'll almost always see the results of your decisions. James Allen said, "We think in secret, and it comes to pass. Environment is but our looking glass." Now, the person who fails to develop their ability to make decisions is doomed because indecision sets up internal conflicts which can, without warning, escalate into all-out mental and emotional wars. There's a word to describe these sort of emotional wars. It's called ambivalence. My Oxford Dictionary tells me that ambivalence is the coexistence in one person of opposite feelings toward the same objective. Now think about that for a moment. You've probably been like that on many occasions. Leave, don't leave. Leave, don't leave. Do it, don't do it. Do it, don't do it. Go, don't go. Say it, don't say it. We're playing this game all the time. Just bang, make a decision and do it. Now, everyone on occasion has had these feelings. Well, with this piece of your success puzzle, you're going to examine the cause of indecision and its escalated state, ambivalence, and hopefully eliminate them by becoming a much more effective decision maker. Now, at this point, you could be asking yourself, how's a person expected to develop this mental ability, the ability to make decisions? Because we all know that the people that do it, they're the ones that make the big money. They're the ones that have the fun. They're the ones that keep moving. And how do we do it? Well, I've got an answer for you. You've got to do it on your own. However, you've already begun by thinking about and digesting this information. You're going to find that the value of a decision is going to have an awful lot to do with the courage required to make it. Now, many of the greatest decisions which were responsible for the foundation of civilization were reached by assuming great risks, which often meant the possibility of death. A good example was the decision made by the 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence in Philadelphia on the 4th of July in 1776. That declaration gave freedom to everyone in the United States of America. However, it could have very easily gone the other way and left all 56 hanging from the gallows. You've got to admit, they were truly courageous. Now, look on page 31. Here are four questions that I use and I would recommend you begin using whenever a major decision must be made. Rather than sitting around and wrestling with it and wringing your hands, just ask these four questions. And sometimes you may be not too popular by making the decision, but in the long haul, you'll be glad you did. Number one, do I want to be, do, or have this? You've got to know, do I want it? Number two, will being, doing, or having this move me in the direction of my goal? Number three, is being, doing, or having this in harmony with God's laws or the laws of the universe? And number four, will being, doing, or having this violate the rights of others? If the answer to the first three questions is yes, and the answer to the last question is no, make the decision and get moving. Don't fool around with it. You can train yourself by asking these questions, and you can become very, very good at making decisions. Give this information on decision practical application and do it right now, rather than merely enjoying the psychological aspect of this piece of the puzzle. In this space provided at the bottom of page 31, clearly describe a situation in which you are in the midst of making a decision. Then apply the information from these four questions to your personal piece of the puzzle. Write it out and then make the decision. I like what Ronald Reagan said. He said, when I've gathered enough information to make a decision, I don't take a vote. I make a decision. Now, the idea on page 32 is probably the best idea that you're ever going to come across to help you make decisions. Let me share a story with you. This story is written up in the Born Rich book. It's written up in the original copy of Chicken Soup for the Soul. It's a powerful story. It's a story about a man that raised $3 million in 3 hours, 3 days after he thought of it. I was working for a corporation at a lodge about, 100 miles north of Toronto 8 or 9 years ago. And halfway to this lodge is a town called Barrie, Ontario. Now, there's a main highway, the 400 highway, runs right through the center of Barrie. On the Friday night, I went up to this lodge on the Thursday night, and I was working there until Sunday night. On the Friday night, a tornado went right across the highway, killed a dozen people, ripped houses apart, flipped cars in the air, and people in that part of the world are just not mentally equipped or physically equipped for something like that. I heard about it on the radio, but I was another 50 miles north of there. Sunday night, I was driving down the highway, and I stopped the car when I got to Barrie. I pulled off on the side of the road. I got out, and I looked, and I thought, wow, what a mess. Well, there was another man did the same thing at a different time, but he did the same thing. Now, this other man and I were to meet the following night on the Monday night. At any rate, his thoughts were a little different than mine. He got out, and he looked at it, and he thought, wow, what a mess. And then he thought, there's got to be something that I can do for these people with the vehicle that we've got. He was the vice president of a broadcasting company that had a number of stations in the province of Ontario and in Quebec in Canada. Well, this idea, there's got to be something we can do for these people, kept playing on his mind. Now, he came out the following night and stood in the back of the room with another gentleman, and the two of them were evaluating the seminar that I was putting on because they were trying to figure out whether they wanted me to work for their broadcasting company, which I subsequently did and worked for the entire broadcasting industry in Canada. At any rate, he picked up an idea while he was in the seminar, and he mixed it with the idea that he had, we've got to help these people. On the Friday, he called a group of his executives together. He took a flip chart, and on the top of the flip chart, he wrote 333. Now, you'll notice on page 32, the A. I'm going to call that the A line. You can put anything you want on that A line. He put 333s. He then said to the people, he didn't have the rest of this drawing. All he had was 333s at the top of a flip chart. He said, how would you like to raise $3 million in 3 hours, 3 days from now, and give it to the people in Barrie? Well, he said there was stunned silence in the room. Finally, someone said, Templeton, you're crazy. The man's name is Bob Templeton. He said, we couldn't raise $3 million in 3 hours, 3 days from now. There's just no way. We couldn't do it 3 months from now. No, he said, wait a minute. I didn't ask you if we could or if we would if we should. I just asked you how you'd like to. Well, they said, sure, we'd like to. Well, then he put the rest of the drawing. He put a T on the left-hand side, just as it is on page 32. He put why I can't or why we can't on the other side, how we will. Now, he then put a great big X under why we can't, and he put next there. Now, he said, when we come up with an idea of why we can't raise the $3 million in 3 hours, 3 days from now, we haven't got any place to write it. And, by the way, we're going to stay here until we figure it out. With the mind we've got, we should be able to figure it out. And he said, we're just going to think of how we will do it. And every time an idea comes, we're going to write it down. Well, of course, everybody thought he was crazy. Now, he said, when an idea comes up of why we can't, somebody's going to yell next. Well, finally, someone reluctantly said we could have a radiothon go right across the country. He said, that's a good idea. He started to write it down. And when he started to write that down, somebody yelled, you know, you couldn't have a radiothon go across the country. We don't have radio stations across the country. Someone else very meekly said, next. Templeton kept writing. Then someone said, another idea, we could get Harvey Kirk and Lloyd Robertson to anchor the show. Now, Harvey Kirk and Lloyd Robertson were anchors on national TV in Canada. They weren't going to go on the radio. However, Bob started to write that down, and somebody said, you're never going to get those two guys on radio. And then a whole group of people yelled, next! And that's the way it's done. Every time an idea comes to your mind of why you can't do it, you say next, and you just keep figuring out how you will. And if you make a decision, it's going to be done. Bob made a decision. The $3 million will be raised in 3 hours, 3 days from now. It was on Friday they had this exercise. The following Tuesday, they had a radiothon go right across the country. Over 50 radio stations were involved. They raised $3 million, and they did it in 3 hours, and they gave it to people in Barrie. Now, the strange part about this is that radio stations are pretty cutthroat. They don't help one another. They're very competitive. They're not really the kind of businesses that get along with one another. And yet here was Templeton, had 50 competitors, all working towards the same thing. The idea was it doesn't matter who gets the credit as long as the people in Barrie get the $3 million. Now, I wouldn't even want to guess that the number of people that have used this idea and solved enormous problems, you can too. Now take a look on page 33. Here's something written on decision that I think is classic. Carol Hildebrand is a beautiful woman. She's a periodontist in Philadelphia. She has a master's degree in education. This woman is forever working at developing herself. And she's written something on decision that I think you can benefit from, because I want you to stop and really give consideration to just how much decision means to you. Now she says there's a corollary element that must go hand in hand with decision. And that is commitment. It must be a committed decision. You see, Bob Templeton made a committed decision. Most of us, she says, have weak decision-making muscles. We do not even recognize what it means to make a real decision. We fail to realize the force of change a truly congruent, committed decision makes. Part of our problem is that we use the term decision so loosely that it has come to describe our wishes and not our commitments. Instead of making decisions, we state our preferences. The word decision comes from the Latin roots de, meaning from, and caedir, meaning to cut. Therefore, a decision means cutting from any other possibility. A true decision, then, means you are committed to achieving a result and then cutting yourself off from any other possibility. You test this with someone. Ask the next person you meet if they've ever been to France or Rio de Janeiro or London, England. And if they say no, say, how would you like to go? How would you like to fly first class and stay at the Ritz? Well, they say, I'd like to. It'd be nice, you know, but I can't do that. You say, well, why not? Well, because I haven't got any money. Well, say, wait a minute. I'm learning something. I'm putting a success puzzle together. And the author says that you don't need any money until you make the decision. And once you make the decision, then you're going to attract the money. Do you know that I've seen people that wanted to buy homes and they weren't buying them because they didn't have any money? And I pointed out to them, I said, just go and buy the home. Once you make the decision to do something, the way will always be shown. But it's got to be a committed decision. There's no going back. Now, Carol Hildebrand concludes here. She's saying, committed decisions show up in two places, your calendar and your checkbook. This piece of the puzzle is going to make a difference in your life. No matter what you say you value or even think your priorities are, you have only to look at last year's calendar and checkbook to see the decisions you have made about what you truly value. Then she gives a personal example. She says, I am committed to growth, both professionally and personally. A review of my calendar always shows multiple continuing education courses, seminars, and workshops in both the personal growth area as well as my profession. My checkbook is filled with tuition disbursements, purchases of books, and videos. She says, you check the bottom line. See how you've reserved your time. Look at your expenditures, because those are the roadmaps to the decisions you have been making in the past. Now, I love this last suggestion. She said, after making a true decision, especially the tough ones, we usually feel a tremendous burden has been lifted from our shoulders. Flip over to 34. You're probably still considering that suggestion that I gave you then about traveling or buying a home. You don't need any of the resources to make the decision. You just make the decision, and then the way will be shown. Look at a little box on knowledge. That's just for you to jot some notes down. All the knowledge there ever was or ever will be is 100% evenly present in all places at all times. You know what that means? The knowledge that will enable you to get the resources you need to take the trip, that knowledge is already here. The knowledge you require to build the business, to buy the home, to do whatever it is that you're deciding to do is already here. But you will never, ever tune into it until you've made the decision. So write in that book on page 34 that knowledge is omnipresent. See, the way to fly an airplane has always been here. It took the Wright brothers to tune into it. The way to build the Learjet was always here. It took Bill Lear to tune into it. The way to do anything that we can think of is already here. All we have to do is tune into it. Now, we will not tune into it if we don't make a decision. Now, look over in the little box on page 34, titled Thought. Let each one of those lines represent a frequency or a level of vibration. Stay with me. Thought is energy. And you and I think on frequencies. On the bottom line, put an X. Put some puffy little clouds on that line. And the puffy little clouds are going to represent thoughts. Now, I am going to suggest that that's the line you're living on right now. That's the line of thinking that you're on. That's the frequency that you're thinking on. And so the thoughts that are coming to you are the thoughts that are on that frequency. Now, the thoughts you're getting on this frequency are not the thoughts that's going to take you to Paris. They're not the thoughts that's going to build the business or buy the house. Flip up about three or four lines. The second you make a decision, you flip your mind on to another frequency. You're on a higher frequency of thought. Therefore, you start to immediately attract new ideas. And the ideas that you require to get you to where you want to go will come to you. But you'll never get them until you make the decision. You see, most people make the decision after they see they've got the resources. They're going about it the wrong way. No one knew how to get to the top of Mount Everest until after they got there. No one's known how to build a business till after they built it. Well, you make the decision to do it first, and the second you make the decision, you instantly flip on to a brand new frequency of thought. All right, now bring your conscious attention down to the bottom box on page 34. Go to the bottom left-hand corner and look at the R. The R represents your present results. Now go up to the top right-hand corner, look at the star. That represents your worthy ideal. Now, you have not realized your worthy ideal. It has not materialized. It's merely an idea in your mind. Your awareness at the present time is giving you the results you're getting. Let's use money as an example for a second. Let's say your results right now are $50,000 a year. The star may represent $50,000 a month. The only thing that's separating you from earning the 50 a month from the 50 a year is the awareness of how to do it. You see, when I was sitting in a fire hall, I was earning $4,000 a year. Now I can earn a few times that in an hour. What's changed? The thing that has changed is my thinking. I'm thinking on a different frequency. I'm operating with a much higher level of awareness. And remember what I said, the useful purpose of the word, the ideal, it's the idea that you're in love with that you'll keep going after. It's the increased awareness that you're going to get that's the win. Now think about this. At the top of the page, we quote Thomas Carlyle. He said, go as far as you can see. When you get there, you'll see how to go further. Now, you're operating on the level of awareness where you're getting the results that you're presently getting. We look ahead to the first line with the arrow going to it. Now, your intuitive factor is going to be telling you to do something, phone someone, go somewhere, do something. You've got to learn to follow your intuitive factor. The second you make a decision, you're on a new frequency of thought, you're going to get different feelings. The way will be shown. So you go as far as you can see. You're not going to see how to get the whole distance. You go as far as you can see. And what did we say happens when you act? There's a reaction. And the action-reaction alters what? The conditions, the circumstance, and the environment. So beside that first line that you've moved up to, put a C, and an E. That's your conditions, your circumstance, and environment. You adapt to the changes that have taken place with your conditions and your circumstance and your environment, and then you'll see the next step of action. You take that step, you've gone as far as you can see, you'll find your conditions, your circumstance, and environment will change. You adapt to that change, and how do you adapt? You adapt with your reasoning factor. This is where you've got to use your higher faculties, and step by step by step by step, you move to a higher and a higher and a higher level of awareness. Now, 5 years ago, you could not have solved the problems that you're solving now because you weren't operating with the same awareness 5 years ago. You have an increase in awareness. Now, that's the way it is. And I repeat again here, you don't have to slow down. You want to calm down. When you're calm, you start to pay attention to the voice of God. What did we say that was? That's vibration. You get a strong vibration. It's your intuitive factor that picks it up. Look over on page 35. In a couple of different places throughout the puzzle here, we've given you pages to fill in. Ideas are alive. They do grow. And when ideas come to your mind, jot them down. Now remember what Carlyle said. Go as far as you can see. When you get there, you'll see how to go further. Make a decision, right or wrong, make the decision. If it's the wrong one, you can always change it. This is Bob Proctor. Thank you.